pop quiz time. Can you tell me what production these lines come from? Say that she rail. Why, then I'll tell her plain she sings as sweetly as a nightingale. Say that she frown. I'll say she looks as clear as morning roses, newly washed with dew. Say she be mute and will not speak a word. Then I'll commend her volubility. And say she uttereth piercing eloquence. If she do bid me pack, I'll give her thanks, as though she bid me stay by her a week. If she deny to wed, I'll crave the day when I shall ask the banns and when be married. At this point, you may have guessed Shakespeare, but which play is it? How about this line? I see a woman may be made a fool if she had not a spirit to resist. Or the most famous line of this play of all, embroidered on 1,000 pillows, printed on 1,000,000 feminine coffee mugs, and screen printed upon hordes of t-shirts. If I be waspish, best beware my sting. All of these lines come from one of Shakespeare's most famous plays, and also one of his most enduring, The Taming of the Shrew. I'm Scott Beyer, and this is the Love Better podcast, where we explore the truths and the lies about love, and more importantly, how to turn love into a skill, something we can get better at and hone along the way. This is the fifth in a 10-part series on learning to love the Lord and our neighbor with all our soul. The soul is that part of you that is eternal. After death, after this life, all you will be left with is your soul to carry on into eternity. If you don't learn how to love with all your soul, you won't have any love left when this life is over. The Taming of the Shrew could aptly be renamed The Taming of the Soul, because that is what it is about. A woman, Kate, with biting wit, fiery spirit, and unwinnable affection, is pursued by a man who attempts to tame his untamable bride. Kate is complicated, dangerous, and in short, shrewish. And that begs the question, if we're going to tame one, what is a shrew? In North America, we rarely see shrews. They do exist here, but they aren't often seen. But in William Shakespeare's world, late 16th century England, the shrew was prevalent and small, but mighty amongst the beasts. Shrews are the smallest mammals in the world. There are several types of them, the common shrew, the short-nosed shrew, the water shrew, which is also known as the cheetah of the wetlands, and the tiniest of them all, the Etruscan shrew. Shrews are insectivores, and they eat bugs, grasshoppers, crickets, worms, and the occasional ant, and most of them are no larger than your thumb. They remind me of tiny ferrets as they slink through the fields and grasslands in search of prey. Lightning quick and armed with tiny sharp spike-like teeth, they are like velociraptors to the insect world. If you were a locust, a shrew would be your worst nightmare. A bit similar in appearance to field mice at a quick glance, they can often be mistaken for rodents. But shrews are no mice. They are quicker, more aggressive, and always on the hunt, because shrews are metabolic royalty. You see, shrews are always, always hungry. The average shrew eats like a hummingbird, constantly, and in great volumes. Shrews will eat 2 to 3 times their own body weight a day. Can you imagine if you did that? If a shrew goes without food for more than a few hours, it'll starve to death. This near constant need to feed drives their aggressive behavior, and it influences their position in the ecosystem. It compels them to be active both day and night, searching almost continuously for food. Their high energy requirement supports a very active lifestyle, but also makes them vulnerable to starvation if they cannot find enough food. In short, a shrew cannot be tamed, because a shrew is always in need. Remember how I said Taming of the Shrew could easily have been titled Taming of the Soul? Here's why. Your soul is the most shrewish part of you. Your soul is always needy. Throughout Scripture, the soul is described as an insatiable thing. You can fill your stomach until you push the plate away. You can sleep enough so that you become ironically tired of sleeping. And your mind, it can reach information overload so that you've had enough learning for the day. Your brain is burnt out. Even our social interactions can reach a point where we are completely satiated. No thanks, no more peopling for me today, thank you. But the soul, well, it never stops hungering and thirsting. We are ever needy things, us humans. And it is a uniquely human trait not seen in the animal kingdom. Watch a lion laze upon a rock or a dog curled up by the hearth, and you can instantly see they know how to be content. Animals are instinctual by nature. Peter even refers to the beasts of the field as creatures of instinct. They pursue only what is right in front of them and no more. Their instincts drive them until the moment or the craving is gone. Yet we as humans, we do the opposite. We can never have enough, never enough time or wisdom or beauty or love or freedom or power or joy or laughter. We are insatiable in our souls. We are the untamed shrews of this world because down here, our souls cry out, we need more. Our soul's infinite ability to need is mirrored only by one thing, God's infinite capacity to give. Nothing in this world can satisfy our souls. Only the creator of this world can tame our hunger for him. And when it comes to the Bible, that is exactly what we read. Consider some of the following passages. Psalm 42, my soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? Psalm 143. I stretch out my hands to you. My soul thirsts for you like a parched land. Isaiah 26. My soul yearns for you in the night. My spirit within me earnestly seeks you. For when your judgments are in the earth, the inhabitants of the world learn righteousness. Psalm 63. O God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you. As in a dry and weary land where there is no water, my soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me. Each of these passages paint the same picture. God is the only one who can satiate the soul. Nothing else satisfies. But it doesn't stop us from trying, right? Do you know what the Bible calls an attempt to satisfy your soul with something other than God, though? In one word, it calls it idolatry. When, in the moment, I place something on a pedestal higher than God, it is idolatry. When I try and fulfill a desire meant only to be fulfilled by God, I have committed idolatry. Our needy souls can only be truly filled by Him, but we often attempt to fill them with many other things. Now, I suspect that if you are listening to this podcast, you wouldn't consider yourself an idolater. Idolatry seems to be an idea that we typically in our mind relegate to the Old Testament and a world where idols were carved in stone and wood. But the New Testament also warns about idolatry, and it says it happens anytime our soul takes things God has given us and turns those things into replacements for Him. I want you to pause for a minute and assess yourself. How would you answer the following questions? Number one, do I have a constant preoccupation with money or find myself fantasizing over a list of things that if bought would make me truly happy? Or number two, if I were asked by others what was most important to me, do I suspect they wouldn't say God or even people are the thing that's most important, but instead something like my job or my hobbies or something else? Number three, does my mood depend on my online interactions? Number four, if a doctor told me I had to give up a certain food or device or habit or risk some major health issue if I didn't, would I be able to do it? Or would I hide it because I didn't want to be held accountable by others to avoid it? Number five, do I find it easy to be generous or hard to share even when I clearly have enough to do so? Number six, do I spend more time, money, or effort on my appearance than on developing my spiritual life or helping others? Number seven, do I ever find that my pursuit of pleasure or entertainment leads me to make unethical decisions or moral compromises in order to not spoil the fun? Or number eight, do I often begin to make decisions based on what will bring me praise or recognition before remembering to consider what is right and ethical? So, how did you do? For me, I found myself to be a bit of a mixed assortment. I feel really good about some of my answers to those questions, but others are just humiliating to think about. I don't like to think of myself as an idolater, but idolatry seems to be regularly beckoning to my needy soul and offering to fill it with the wrong sorts of things. And it won't work. The soul needs spiritual food, and that can only come from the Father. There is no number of YouTube videos or sunsets or public praise or career advancement or material possessions or entertainment or relationships with others that can fill the void left when we don't seek God. And that is exactly what the scriptures teach in one of the most unlikely of places, the Book of Lamentations. If you are unfamiliar with Lamentations, it is a collection of five poems or laments written by the prophet Jeremiah. The poems vividly describe the siege and destruction of the city of Jerusalem, Jeremiah's hometown. Pictures of famine, death, pain, distress, and desolation are interwoven throughout these poems of grief. And yet, despite the overwhelming sorrow, the poems are hopeful, even downright optimistic at times. Why? Well, the reason why is because Jeremiah's inner world, his soul, is satisfied by God even as his outer world is on fire. Consider the soul-craving words of Lamentations 3. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. Did you catch the language of Jeremiah in that passage? God is his portion. That's feasting language. Jeremiah has chosen to feed his infinitely hungry soul with the love of the Lord, which never ceases and is new every morning. Infinite hunger satisfied with infinite food. So what must I do to tame the shrewish metabolism of my soul? After all, a hungry soul is a constant problem. And just as the pangs don't seem to go away, Satan will continue to serve up rich delicacies and devilish distractions to entice you and I away from making God our portion. It's like our souls are ever thirsty, and yet we're surrounded by shimmering salt water, always tempting us to drink it to our doom. Paradoxically, the answer to taming the shrew's cravings is to become shrewd. Shrewd people have good judgment, and they see what other less eagle-eyed folks don't. A shrewd businessman knows the value of his time and his dollar, and he refuses to be swindled by a bad bargain or cheap sales tactic. A shrewd lawyer knows the law. They figure out how to win the case despite the odds. And a shrewd mother sees through her children's typical kid manipulation so that she can meet their deeper needs, not just their tantrum wants. Shrewd people see what they need, and they won't accept anything less. I need you to start having a shrewd soul, and I want you to talk to your soul about it. When confronted with a typical idolatrous temptation, pause, reflect, and then tell yourself, soul, this won't satisfy you. Start talking to your soul like it is a person, because it is. The Bible is full of soul talk, just like that. In Luke 12, verse 19, Jesus tells a parable of a man that had a great crop that year, and it yielded so much harvest that he needed to figure out what to do with the surplus. And when trying to figure out what to do with the blessing, what does the man do? Well, he talks to his soul. In Luke 12, he said, "I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry." In this parable, the man speaks lies to his soul. He tries to feed his soul with retirement plans instead of God. I want you to do the opposite. Be shrewd. When temptation strikes or your soul craves for more, do what David does in Psalm 42. Talk to your soul. "Why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God, for I shall again praise him, my salvation and my God." Or what about when this world is good? I mean really good. And it seems like everything positive and wonderful is prospering in your life. How do you protect your soul from craving the world when your outer world is really pretty good? I want you to do what David does in Psalm 103. Talk to your soul. "Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgives all your iniquity, who heals all your diseases, who redeems your life from the pit, who crowns you with steadfast love and mercy, who satisfies you with good, so that your youth is renewed like the eagles." Psalm 103, 1 through 5. Tell your soul that now is the time to be grateful and to praise. Tell your soul what to do. Boss it around. After all, Deuteronomy 4:9 says, "Keep your soul diligently." You are your soul's keeper. It's your job to tame the shrew. And even though that seems impossible some days, with God, all things are possible. So learn to love better. Learn to tame your soul and feed its eternal cravings. When we seek to have God fill our souls, we learn to love him better. If you've listened this far, hopefully we've done something to help make your life a little bit better. Would you mind returning the favor and helping us by subscribing to the podcast through your favorite platform? When you share with others or leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you help us reach more people, and for that we're grateful. Also, if you want more information about the work I'm doing at Eastland, visit us at eastlandchristians.org or my personal Bible site, BibleGrad.com, where you can sign up for daily Bible devotionals called Bible Bites and receive them in your email each morning. Take online Bible classes or find videos that will help you study through the Bible throughout the year. And until next time, remember, You are loved. So go love better.